The House Committee on Human Service, Finance, and Policy will come to order, and the Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We get to meet at 8:15 in the morning, and so we will do this 3 days a week to the point where it becomes habit for everyone. And as we start to develop this habit, it would be good if we started with some introductions. We'll start with the Republican Caucus research and then come around the horseshoe.
Tom Brennan, House GOP Research.
Jimmy Gordon, District 28A.
Steve Gander, 1B, up in the northwest corner, East Grand Forks and that area.
Representative Steve Jacob, 20B, kind of Rochester, Winona area.
Representative Tom Murphy, 9B, the eastern Otter Tail and western Douglas counties.
Representative Krista Knutza, House District 5A, which is parts of Becker, Wadena, Hubbard, and Cass counties.
Jeff Backer, four counties, Wilkin, Travers, Grant, and the western two-fifths of Otter Tail. So right on the North Dakota-South Dakota border.
Don Gilman, District 17A.
Megan Rosbach, I am your GOP committee administrator.
Joe Schumacher, representing Southwest Minnesota.
Joseph Ruhoff, committee legislative assistant.
Mahmoud Nur, District 60B.
Ixtu Malanger, the DFL committee administrator.
Hey, Hannah Washday, Heather Keeler, District 4A, Moorhead.
I'm Matt Norris. I have the privilege of representing Blaine and Lexington.
Representative Kim Hicks, 25A, which is actually Rochester.
Luke Frederick, 18B, which is Mankato, Eagle Lake, and Skyline.
Good morning. Hulda Hiltzley, representing 38, that is Osseo and Brooklyn Park.
Representative Breon Curran, 36B, White Bear Lake, Badness Heights, Gem Lake, Birchwood Village, and half of White Bear Township.
Good morning, Bianca Vernig. I represent 52B, Egan, Mendota Heights, and Mendota.
Good morning, Molly Peterson, House DFL Research.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Danielle Pinelli from House Research.
Joe Harney, House Fiscal.
Doug Berg, House Fiscal.
And Sarah Sunderman, House Research.
Very good. We got through that piece, at least.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to recognize the page who are joining us. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Thank you. One piece of housekeeping as we get going. In your packets, there is the committee rules that we have for this 8:15 meeting. And you'll note a couple of things in there that are worth noting. No signs, no awkwards, no clapping, no standing or sitting in the walkways or aisles. Like an airplane, we need to keep things orderly while we're here. Today we have a presentation from nonpartisan staff just doing an overview of the budget, mostly the change items and the forecast to kind of start the discussion on what will be the main focus of this year, which is our budget. So without further ado, welcome to the committee. Please state your name once again for the record and present your testimony.
Chair Schumacher, Joe Harney, House Fiscal. Mr. Berg and I have put together at your request, a presentation on the House Human Services General Fund budget and an analysis of the growth, both in past biennia and with the recent November 2024 economic forecast. Before we get to the growth at the end, it's worth sort of level setting with some context. I'm going to start with a reminder of jurisdiction, talk about the combined HHS committee budget with the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Show you the split between both committees by agency. I'll talk about historical projected spending, growth by budget activity for this committee, and then we'll transition to changes that occurred again in the November 2024 economic forecast. Just for your reference, all numbers provided here come from the November 2024 general fund analysis from MMB, the November 2024 expenditure forecast from DHS, and the background data tables for the November 2024 forecast produced by DHS. So starting here with jurisdiction for the House Committee budget in 25 and 26 sessions, the Human Services Finance Committee has the large share of the Department of Human Services within it and a couple of other entities. Included at the activity level is MA Basic Care for Elderly and Disabled, MA Long-Term Care Facilities, MA Elderly and Disabled Waiver Services, Alternative Care, General Assistance, Housing Support, Minnesota Supplemental Aid, behavioral health generally, central office, all of it. A large majority of the DHS grants, approximately 12 or 13 of them, the Department of Direct Care and Treatment, which is a mistake. It's not a department, but rather an agency effective August 1st, 2026, July 1st, 2026. And there are other de minimis agencies. Just for your awareness, the Health Committee then has the other side of the ledger. The Health Committee contains MA Basic Care Adults Without Children, MA Basic Care Families with Children, Minnesota Care, the remaining increment of DHS grants that aren't within this committee, MNsure, and the health-related boards and other de minimis agencies. This slide shows you the House combined HHS committee budget for the base 26-27 biennium. The base budget is approximately $21.6 billion, which is, again, approximately 32% of the total general fund spend that the state authorizes every biennium. The Department of Human Services is $19.9 billion of that $21 billion. Direct Care and Treatment contains just over another $1 billion in base spending. The Department of Health has $533 million in base spending. Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board is the former name. It is now the Office of EMS. This is approximately $12 million in spending. The Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities is approximately $7 million. Council on Disability, $4.8 million. And then you have the Board of Pharmacy, the Rare Disease Advisory Council, and MNsure, all totaling under $1 million in base general fund appropriations. Now, I mentioned the jurisdiction. This is the split on the money side. Beginning with the Department of Human Services, you see that health has $2.3 billion in spending. It's worth noting that for the sake of this calculation, in the base budget, there is a large appropriation from the Health Care Access Fund for all of medical assistance. For the sake of accounting, House Fiscal tracks that total appropriation against one side of the ledger, and we track all of that base appropriation in the Health Committee. So that reduces the total DHS spend by approximately $1.1 billion. Because it subsidizes the general fund share. The Human Services Finance Committee, this committee, has $17.5 billion. This committee has DCT. The Health Committee has MDH, EMSRB, the Board of Pharmacy, Rare Disease, and MNsure, and the remaining portions for Human Services Finance are the Ombudsman for Mental Health and DD and the Council on Disabilities. This is the first historical look on this slide over the biennial general fund growth for all agencies and all budget activities within both committees' jurisdiction. One sort of side note here, but it is important, is the actuals and estimated include the DCYF budget activities due to the historical reporting overlap. That department was effective in law last year. If you look past to previous biennia, a large majority of the new department had budget activities that were within the Department of Human Services. So for consistency's sake, we decided to count it all the same. I'm going to go quickly to the next slide so you can see the percentage growth. Beginning with fiscal year 2018-2019, you start with an actual of $13.3 billion for all agencies. The growth here begins in the considerable growth begins in the fiscal year 24-25 estimate. The estimate is $20.9 billion right now. That's approximately a 38% increase from fiscal year 22 and 23. For fiscal years 26 and 27, the upcoming biennium the legislature will appropriate for, the base amount represents a 12% increase over the previous biennium. And for fiscal year 28-29, known as the tails or the planning years, that represents a 12.9% increase over the upcoming biennium here. And again, just to reiterate, probably approximately $2.1 billion in the estimated fiscal years includes the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So this slide shows you a lot more detail about the budget activities and their base spending for this committee. You have MA long-term care waivers with an upcoming base appropriation in fiscal years 26 and 27 of $8.5 billion. MA elderly and disabled basic care contains $5.3 billion in base spending. MA long-term facilities contains $1.3 billion in savings. All the central office is approximately $551 million. The behavioral health fund is $236 million. Alternative care is $111 million. General assistance is $167 million. Minnesota supplemental aid is $136 million. Housing support is $544 million. And the base grants that are within this committee's jurisdiction total $626 million. I'll note that there is a reduction of $36 million for the alternative care program MA offset. That amount is tracked, but not necessarily appropriated. It's just a difference. Now, this slide is represents the growth from the previous slide budget activities, beginning from the actuals in fiscal year 22, going forward through 24, 25, through to 28 and 29. I'll get to the detail in the next slide of the increment, so you don't have to do the math in your head now. But the actuals in 22 and 23 for the committee represent $10.5 billion. The estimate for the current biennium we are in is $16.3 billion. You have $17.5 billion in the upcoming biennium you are appropriating for, and $19.8 billion in the tails. I'll note one thing, again, just not to spend so much time in the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, but it's worth talking about on this slide alone, is that there are considerable amount of grants that are tracked on this slide for fiscal years 22 and 23 and 24 and 25 that have since transitioned to the new department. Do know I'm going to drop this from the next slide in the growth because it's really difficult to track, and there's actually a forthcoming governor's budget proposal to reorganize some of these grants that remain at the department. Do know that this is something that Mr. Berg and I can provide more detail on, but for the sake of top level dollar amounts, that we are going to sort of drop that discussion for the remaining time we have in the presentation. Just to orient to you what's happening on this slide, you have growth by dollar, growth by percent for each fiscal year beginning fiscal year or biennium beginning in 24 and 25. The 24 and 25 growth and 8% increase columns use 22 and 23 as the base year. That adjust accordingly as you move to the right. So 26 and 27 uses 24 and 25 as the base year. 28 and 29 use 26 and 27 as the base year to calculate the growth. This is then further segregated into MA and non-MA. In MA, you have, again, LTC waivers, LTC facilities, elderly and disabled basic. In 24 and 25, the percent increase from the previous biennium is 45.9%. In 26 and 27, the percent increase from the previous biennium for MA is 20.8%. And then for fiscal years 28 and 29, the percent increase is 15%. Total non-MA growth, this contains all the forecasted programs except the central office. The central office is a direct appropriation. The percent increase in 24 and 25 from the previous year was 177%. The percent increase in the base for this biennium that you are appropriating for is minus 61, approximately 62%. And the increase for non-MA spending in the tails is projected to be 2%. I'll pause on this slide just to highlight some things of note, particularly on the central office line. You see the huge increase in 24 and 25 of $490 million, representing an 85% growth, and then a subsequent decrease in 26 and 27 of negative 48% growth. That can largely be attributed to a portion of the surplus that the 23 and 24 legislature appropriated that was one time in nature. A considerable amount of that money was appropriated to the central office budget activity at the department, and that is why it drops off in the base because of the one-time nature of that spend. I'm going to transition to talking about the November 2024 forecast. It's worth framing this as changes made from February and the end of session. The 23 and 24 legislature, the last basis for the appropriations that that legislature made was the February 2024 forecast. This November 2024 forecast and the numbers I'm talking about represent the increment from that current law to November 2024. So the numbers will look different, but just know that they represent the increment of the change, but not the total change in appropriations. Top-line dollars, the November 2024 forecast at DHS produced $183 million in a general fund reduction in the current biennium and a $523 million increase in fiscal years 26 and 27. That's largely attributed to lower-than-expected MA basic care enrollment, offset by an increase in MA LTC waivers and a reduction in the medical assistance federal share that's effective October 2025. Since this presentation is on the growth in the budget, I'm going to set aside the MA basic care enrollment offset and talk a little bit about the increases in the LTC waivers. This slide shows the November 2024 forecast growth versus February. Again, so February was the last basis of an estimate for these forecasted programs. The November forecast updates the assumptions accordingly. The forecast published by MMB and DHS shows that the CADI waiver is projected to have an average payment increase of 4.5% in fiscal years 24 and 25 and 11.8% in fiscal years 26 and 27. That amounts to a $116 million increase in the current biennium and a $369 million increase in fiscal years 26 and 27. For the DD waiver, the average payment is projected to go up in both biennia by 3.5%, and then 3.5% growth compared to November reflects a $73 million increase in fiscal years 24 and 25 and $107 million in 26 and 27. Associated with the CADI payment is an assumption on CADI caseload, that the caseload is projected to increase by 1.8% in 24 and 25 and 5.6 in fiscal years 26 and 27. That represents a $47 million increase in 24 and 25 and $176 million in 26 and 27. DWRS inflation catch-up for effective for January 1st, 2026 has a $72 million impact in fiscal years 26 and 27. And the FMAP change mentioned on the previous slide from the federal government that's effective October 2025 is a decrease from 51.16% to 50.68%. That has the effect of cost the state having to put up more for their share of medical assistance, and that share is approximately $74.6 million in 26 and 27. There are other changes that in the LTC waivers that amount to $1.9 and $25.1 million respectively, bringing the grand total adjustments for MA LTC waiver growth to $238.8 million in 24 and 25 and $824.8 million in fiscal years 26 and 27. Last slide here to provide you a context on the growth is the waiver enrollment for the CADI and DD waivers I just talked about, the average cost per recipient, and the total state share in millions of dollars that are expected to be the base. So whereas before I was talking about the increment and the change from February to November, this estimate, the total state share estimate, is the total state share of the cost of DD and CADI in millions of dollars in the reporting window I have here. So the waiver enrollment numbers are real, in real terms, so meaning it's $83,000 in CADI, or 83,000 people in CADI in 22 and 23, and 48,000 in 22 and 23 for DD. You can see the growth there. It jumps from CADI to 125,000 enrollees, and for DD, 56,000 enrollees in 28 and 29. Average cost per recipient, two increases. CADI begins in 22 and 23 with an average cost per recipient of $46,000 to $74,000 per recipient, and DD jumps from $91,000 per recipient to $120,000 per recipient. Taking all that together, the total state share estimated below for CADI jumps from $1.5 billion in 22 and 23 to $4.6 billion in 28 and 29, and the forecasted total state share for DD is $2.5 billion in 22 and 23, jumping to $3.453 billion in 28 and 29. So some takeaways to land this for you is it's worth considering for the committee the difference between and how you deal with MA budget growth versus non-MA budget growth. If you want to adjust the growth in MA spend, you are faced with a few simple possibilities. You either have to adjust the benefits that recipients receive, or you have to adjust the amount of people who are enrolled, or you have to find the revenue to pay for the amount that is growing. Or any combination of those three are possibilities for the legislature to consider. Non-MA budget growth is much simpler. Let's say you have a grant at DHS that costs X dollar amount. You can simply go into the budget, since it's a direct appropriation, you neither decrease or increase that grant accordingly. These forecasted and direct appropriations are tied to that sort of sentiment I just expressed, right? The forecasted growth in MA is really tied to the statutes that set forth the benefits and amount of enrollees versus direct appropriations are that which the legislature expresses total control over every time they pass an appropriations article. That's sort of the main takeaway. Nonpartisan staff sees it. It's the committee's now role to deal with either a forthcoming budget resolution in the target and produce a budget accordingly. With that, thank you. Mr. Berg and I are available for questions if you guys have any. We may defer to the department who's planning on coming in on Thursday to talk about the governor's proposal, but we're happy to talk about any of the information we reported today.
Thank you, Mr. Harney, for that presentation there. I'll start out the questions here. I just have one that comes to mind right offhand, and that's on the forecasting piece. Who does the forecasting for that? Is that through MMB? Is that through the departments?
Chair Schumacher, members, so MMB produces the aggregate economic forecast. DHS is an integral part in that. They have a whole forecast and financial reporting division that's structured and required by the feds for reporting on medical assistance growth. That's why in the sources I sort of disentangle the MMB numbers and the DHS numbers. They are the same, but one informs the other is probably the best characterization I can give you.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Harney on this presentation? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harney, I just wanted to quickly check on some of the assumptions. Knowing that there's some federal cuts in some of the medical assistance assumptions, how will that impact the budget projections that you talked about, including the FMAP? I think there's some discussion of reducing states' share, states' percentage that they're getting. Can you comment on that?
Mr. Harney.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Knorr. So the only federal, the main federal interaction that's booked in the forecast is the reduction in FMAP. That's because the feds every year calculate on, to be redundant, the per capita GDP of a state relative to their medical assistance population. It's Minnesota has a strong per capita GDP, which means Minnesota receives the lower bound of the federal FMAP share. I think some states it goes as high as 70, 80%. Minnesota's down at the lowest possible bound at now 50.68%. At another level, things that are happening at the federal government portion in the forecast, MMB and DHS will typically only assume things that are current law at the federal level or almost certainly about to happen at the federal level. Everything else is relatively speculative until a law is passed by the feds, a rule is passed by the feds, CMS provides guidance on those rules and laws, and the legislature then can get information from the executive branch accordingly.
Representative Knorr.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hine, I just wanted to also ask, are we tracking the budget for direct care and treatment separately in terms of, because there'll be an agency of itself, because right now it's kind of commingled with the DHS.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Doug Berg, I'll answer that because I do the direct care and treatment part. It is currently in the numbers that Mr. Harney was going through because it is still a part of the Department of Human Services. It will be splitting off on July 1st of 2026. Most of the work involved in that has already been done, the laws. There probably will be some cleanup this year. You'll see it on the spreadsheets for this committee, but it will be, if you've ever looked at like a fund balance statement, which probably most of you haven't, it is moving from the DHS section of it to its own section in the next biennium, but for now, it's in all the numbers.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Beck, for that. The other question that I have is, I think the percentage growth on alternative care looks like significant there, or am I misreading?
Mr. Harney.
Sorry, Chair Schumacher, Representative Knorr, can you say that again? I missed it.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the human services increase. I don't know which page number is this. Number 10. 10. The percentage increase for 26-27 for alternative care looks like 49.21%.
Yep, correct.
All right, just wanted to confirm. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair Schumacher, Representative Knorr, Mr. Berg and I can get back to you. Just one piece that informs all the growth here is hundreds of pages of spreadsheets that the 2023 and 2024 legislature adopted. For the sake of this presentation, we thought not to go into the detail of those change items, but we can certainly get back to you on some of the legislative changes that impacted that growth.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming we're going to get the big budget book so that it explains the difference. So thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, I'll just on that note, possibly tomorrow or Thursday, you'll be getting some kind of an email from us that will have the links to the budget book and a summary level look at the governor's budget. So budget recommendations, that is coming tomorrow or Thursday.
All right. Thank you for that. Anything else, Representative Knorr?
Thank you for now, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hicks.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. When we're looking at the CADI and the DD growth, do you know, and maybe this is a question for the department, do we know what percentage of those individuals are over the age of 65 and are remaining on their primary waiver because they were disabled prior to becoming elderly?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, I am going to let the department speak to that when they get up here.
And if they're so willing.
If I may add some context to my question for the department.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you. The reason I ask is because we know that Minnesota is aging. And we know that people with disabilities are also aging. And because we've done such a great job in this state and as a country in general, supporting people with developmental disabilities, Down syndrome, autism, cerebral palsy, we're seeing, you know, actual life expectancy increase for folks with disabilities. And if they're on their waivers prior to 65, they get to stay on those waivers and not move to the elderly waiver because they require a higher level of care. And so just for context, I'd like to know what that percentage is, folks on CADI and folks on DD who are over 65.
Dr. Bailey, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and help Representative Hicks with her question.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, and Representative Hicks, thanks for having me. Elise Bailey, Budget Director for the Department of Human Services. I do have some stats in front of me. It's not, I don't have the DD numbers, but to give you kind of a picture of how many people we serve on CADI who are over the age of 65, in 2015, 23% of all people over 65 were served on CADI on the MA program receiving long-term care. That has grown to 43%. So of all the people, again, of all the people who are over 65 and receiving long-term care in their homes and communities, they're receiving care through the CADI waiver. So we are seeing growth there.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And can you tell me, when we look at the service menu that exists on CADI versus the EW waiver, is CADI typically a more expensive, comprehensive waiver?
Director Bailey.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Hicks. Generally, CADI has more services underneath that waiver. We've also had more ongoing rate increases for the services that are paid. To answer some questions from earlier, probably the increase to alternative care is because you all increased the rates for elderly waiver and alternative care by approximately 45% generally. Those rates hadn't been increased for many, many years. So I think the average direct care wage was even $13 an hour before 2023. So CADI has been under the DWRS rate framework generally, and we've had ongoing increases to get those direct care wages up. So generally, yes. I mean, I think people can find care in an easier fashion under the CADI waiver.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much for that. I think it's really important that when we talk about growth in CADI and we talk about growth in DD waivers, when we say it like that, we're talking about a service. But those services are tied to people who are using those services to stay on the planet. And as the department just shared, that includes over 40% of the people using those services are elderly. And so when we talk about who's our most important and where we're using our funds and where we're seeing increases, I think we have to keep in mind that we are of an aging state, and that plays into these conversations. So I really appreciate you highlighting that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Any further questions for the presentation? Seeing none, Mr. Harney, Mr. Berg, the committee thanks you for your presentation today. Next, we have House Research. If you could please state your name once again for the record and present your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members, Sarah Sunderman from House Research, and Ms. Pinelli and I are going to go through the document that you all have that goes over the policy purview of this committee. This is in very sort of general terms and lays out the chapters and sections of statute that the committee will likely focus on this session. So starting with the general bucket of the Department of Human Services Central Office and Office of Inspector General chapters, we have Chapter 245, the Department of Human Services. The first sort of segment of this chapter establishes the Department of Human Services and outlines certain administrative requirements. Chapter 245A is Human Services Licensing. This establishes licensing requirements for human service, DHS human services programs. Chapter 245C is human services background studies. It lays out who must receive a background study, when the background studies must occur, the general processes for conducting background studies, disqualification criteria, and background study fees. Moving to Chapter 256, entitled Human Services, there is some overlap with 245 in that it lays out the Commissioner of Human Services powers and duties, but it also establishes the Council on Disability, the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care, and the Board on Aging. And then Chapter 256G is Unitary Residence and Financial Responsibility. This doesn't come up overly often, but it's important to know it exists. So this governs financial responsibility for social services programs administered by DHS and DCT, in which residence is a determining factor. And I'll hand it over to Ms. Pinelli to talk about the long-term care chapters.
Mr. Chair and members, Danielle Pinelli from House Research again. The next sort of topic that we're going to talk about is the long-term care chapters. And the first chapter is Chapter 245D, the Home and Community-Based Services Standards chapter, which lays out standards for home and community-based services related to service planning and delivery, record requirements, facility licensure, community residential settings, day services facilities, alternative licensing inspections, and mental health certification. The next chapter is Chapter 252, Services for Persons with Developmental Disabilities. This chapter provides for parental contributions for services provided to certain children in out-of-home settings. It also establishes the Semi-Independent Living Services Program. It governs intermediate care facilities for persons with developmental disabilities, and it establishes day training and habilitation services. Chapter 256B, Medical Assistance for Needy Persons. I'll just note that parts of this chapter are under the jurisdiction of the Health Committee, but the pieces of it that relate to long-term care govern various programs under medical assistance and covered services for seniors and persons with disabilities, including alternative care, essential community supports, the MA disability waivers and the disability waiver rate system, community-directed, consumer-directed community supports, the personal care assistance program, the community first services and supports program, and long-term care consultation services. The next chapter is Chapter 256C, Persons with Disabilities. This provides for public accommodations and housing accommodations for persons who are blind, and it also establishes the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing State Services Division within the Department of Human Services, the Regional Service Centers, and the Commission on the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing. Chapter 256R relates to nursing facility rates, and it establishes the MA reimbursement rates for nursing facilities. And then finally, Chapter 256S is Medical Assistance Elderly Waiver, and this establishes the program parameters for the MA Elderly Waiver Program, including eligibility requirements, assessments, authorization of services, and rate setting.
And Mr. Chair and members, I will now go over the behavioral health chapters. Starting with the remaining sections of Chapter 245, these sections govern a variety of mental health services and programs. They contain the Adult Mental Health Act and the Children's Mental Health Act, sections relating to community support and day treatment services, children's mental health grants, school-linked behavioral health grants, and Children's Mental Health Integrated Fund. They also established the Compulsive Gambling Treatment Program and the Office of Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. And these sections in 245 also provide for mental illness crisis housing. Moving to Chapter 245F, this chapter governs withdrawal management programs, including provisions related to program licensure, admission and discharge policies, assessments, medical services, staff qualifications and requirements, and patient records. Chapter 245G is similar but related to substance use disorder licensed treatment facilities. This chapter governs SUD licensed treatment facilities, including provisions related to licensing requirements, assessments, individual treatment plans, treatment and medical services, staff qualifications and requirements, and opioid treatment programs. Chapter 245I is the Mental Health Uniform Service Standards Act. This provides for uniform service and licensing standards for a range of mental health services providers, including provisions related to provider qualifications and scope of practice, training, treatment supervision, documentation and filing requirements, assessments, treatment planning, mental health clinic certification, and service-specific requirements. Chapter 254B, Substance Use Disorder Treatment. This governs SUD treatment services, including standards of care, vendor and individual eligibility for behavioral health fund services, rate methodologies, and payment processes, also some provider qualifications and service requirements and training requirements. And finally, in behavioral health, we have various sections of 256B. As Ms. Pinelli mentioned, some of 256B is also in the Health Committee. But there are various sections listed in this document related to adult and children's mental health services covered by MA and substance use disorder services covered by MA. Moving to sections related to vulnerable adults, we have Chapter 256M, the Vulnerable Children and Adults Act. This provides for adult protection grant allocations and service plans. And then the reporting of maltreatment of vulnerable adults sections are sections 626.557 to 626.5573. These sections establish requirements and processes for reporting and investigation of the maltreatment of vulnerable adults. Ms. Minnelli will discuss the next sections.
Mr. Chair, the next topical section we're going to go over is the Homelessness, Housing, and Support Services chapters. Chapter 256D, Economic Assistance, establishes the General Assistance and Minnesota Supplemental Aid Programs and lays out the eligibility requirements and benefit standards for those programs. Chapter 256I governs housing support. It establishes the housing support program and lays out eligibility requirements and monthly rates under that program. Chapter 256K governs services for homeless families and youth. It establishes various programs related to providing shelter and services for persons experiencing homelessness, including emergency services grants, transitional housing programs, safe harbor shelter and housing, shelter-linked youth mental health grants, the Homeless Youth Act, and long-term homeless supportive services. And the final chapter in this topical area, Chapter 256P, Economic Assistance Program Eligibility and Verification, establishes program eligibility and verification requirements for a variety of economic assistance programs that are administered by both DHS and the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So this chapter is also within the jurisdiction of the Children and Families Committee.
And finally, moving to the direct care and treatment chapters, we have Chapter 246, State-Operated Services. This governs state-operated services in state facilities and state-operated community-based programs for individuals with complex needs related to behavioral health and developmental and intellectual disabilities. Chapter 256B governs the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, including provisions related to licensure, the vocational work program, payment for care and treatment, and county financial liability. Chapter 246C, Direct Care and Treatment, establishes the agency, the new agency, the executive board and chief executive officer, and governs the duties and authority of those entities and of direct care and treatment services generally. And finally, Chapter 253B is the chapter that governs civil commitment procedures. And that concludes our overview of the policy sections.
All right. Thank you very much for that. I think it's helpful to know where these things lie and when there's references to chapters but not really what the chapter is about. It can get really confusing, as if there isn't enough in health care that's confusing. Questions for House Research? Representative Gander.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Members, if I wrap my head around all of this presentation that we received today. First of all, I'm very, very thankful to have had this material. One of the things we have pledged to do is not put our nonpartisan staff on the hot seat. Okay, how would you balance this if you were going to balance this? But what we have seen is that dollars allocated to these kinds of things have been increasing faster than our total budget. And in that environment, what happens is other things get squeezed out, you know, K-12 education and other things. So some way we want to try to find to balance that. And I appreciated your clean analysis earlier, which is we can decrease the dollar allocation per person. We can decrease the number of people who are enrolled, or we can allocate more funds to the total of what we're doing here. There will be, I think, ideas coming forward from us and from our governor on how to bring some cost containment here. And my challenge for all of us, and I would love for anyone else to feed into it, is when those come forward, don't be too quick to just shoot them down out of hand, because we're really going to try to brainstorm how do we get on top of this? How do we get control of this to take care of those who need it the most, you know, older folks with, you know, mental illness and other things. You know, we really want to care for them well. And to, you know, to the least of these who can't take care of themselves, of course, we want to be all about that. And so it will be a challenge for us, I think, without letting this overtake the total state budget, to hold it at bay and still do right by these people. And one more final thing, and anyone else can weigh in, Mr. Chair. We can't divert it to the counties. I mean, I've been at county budget meetings also who say our social service spending is growing unchecked, and it's squeezing out, you know, roads and bridges and all the other kind of things that we need to do. So to be humane, to be really mindful of these dear souls, but at the same time, fitting it all together in a budget that the taxpayers are happy to pay. That would be our challenge. And I think that's a worthwhile conversation all the way along. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gander. Other comments for the committee or questions for House Research? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was Ms. Pinelli talking about the background studies. Sunderman. Okay, so my question is, we have a lot of issues with background studies in the state in general. Many different areas need to utilize background studies. I know because this conversation started in children, youth, and family, because a lot of the background studies that we're having issues with are for child care workers. Can you just break down, like, professionally, which background studies are in this jurisdiction for us so that we know as a committee what we're talking about? Because there's so many background studies across so many areas that are issues.
Ms. Sunderman.
Mr. Chair and members, so Chapter 245C covers all human services background studies, which includes anyone licensed by the Department of Human Services, but also will include individuals licensed by DCYF. I believe they're going to have some sort of interagency agreement to continue doing background studies for child care providers and other individuals licensed by DCYF. MDH also uses the DHS background study system, and so it's a broad range of people. It's within the hundreds of thousands of people.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. I think it's really important for us as a committee to kind of know that, because one of the things that we've learned is that we contract with an outside entity that helps us get all of our background studies, that it's not even local. So I know in greater Minnesota, it's a much bigger issue, especially on our side of the state. People are waiting like 6 to 8 weeks to get a background study to be a daycare worker. Well, they've gone and worked at like Starbucks by now. And so it's our childcare, it's our nursing, it's our senior living. I mean, it's all of those areas are really having this backlog. And so knowing that background studies are here for DCYF and DHS and Department of Health, you said, right? That's a really big net that we need to talk about, because when we talk about access for our employment and in like growing who is working in our industry, the background studies and the background checks are a massive burden. And so if we can just continue to keep that on our radar, I think that would be great for our communities. Thank you.
Representative Keeler, anything to that, Ms. Sunderman?
No, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Any other questions, Representative Knorr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Sunderman and Ms. Pugnelli. Quick question is, where's the 144G in this picture? Because it's the assisted living. Because it's licensed by MDH, but it's mostly folks who are in assisted living that we do have a jurisdiction.
Ms. Pugnelli.
Mr. Chair, 144G, the assisted living licensure, is administered by the Department of Health. So it's my understanding that that is going to be within the Health Committee's jurisdiction.
Representative Knorr.
Mr. Chair, as I understand, I think there was conversation in prior session that 144G component, because of the setting in the Senate, that it stays within the human service. I don't know if that has changed, but that was our assumption, because it kind of works through this whole process. All the programs that we're talking about touches 144G, and I think we need to reevaluate that section.
Thank you, Representative Knorr. Any other questions for House Research? All right, seeing none, the committee thanks you for your presentation today. Programming note, first, we had quorum as we started this morning, so we got that underway. Tomorrow we'll be hearing from the counties and their kind of how they play into the role of the Department of Human Services from their perspective. That's probably who we hear more from than the department themselves when we're in our districts. And then we'll be taking public testimony on the governor's budget. On Thursday, we'll be hearing the governor's budget, the proposals from the Department of Human Services. That is a little backwards than what is expected. That wasn't an intentional slight. That was just how the schedule worked this week. So stay tuned as we continue with that. And with that, we are adjourned.